because the moment I do, it's nothing but a battle, and I just can't be screamed at all day long, every day, by people who feel they can act like children and do this. And I said, Smore, you got to get away from this station. You got to take a break. If you don't, you're going to end up dead of a heart attack. Well, he'd end up dead of a stroke. Unfortunately, because he couldn't pull himself back, and I even suggested he take a job elsewhere, you know, at another radio station. He was looking at other options, by the way, because he saw there was only so much he could do here. I'm Gary Nall. You're listening to WBAI in New York City, 99.5 FM. This is an extended part of our program because over the last 2 weeks I've devoted 2 hours to the dissidents discussing the issue of the station, and one of the points that they have made is the removal of Bessie Walsh, Ken Ford, and other supporting members of the board, and Utrecht Lead is at the top of the list. I felt it was necessary for people to hear Utrecht's side, and wherever possible, to document her statements. I'm merely suggesting that before we take a side and assume that everything that someone is saying is correct, we look at the facts. Whether it is Utrecht making those statements or whether it's dissenting members making the statements, look at the facts and make sure you know what you're looking at in the context of which you're looking at it. If anybody has hard data other than suggested ideas about the selling of the station, then let me know that data. I'd like to see it. I've looked at all the papers, looked at all the documents, and I have not seen anything that would be interpreted as this was an absolute plan of action. Ideas are one thing. Yes, there were ideas, but those ideas were shot down. But what's interesting is what Michael Palmer said, the guy who came up with the idea. He says, Gary, I thought they all gave me ideas that would have cost several million dollars. You know, I think he said $7 million is what would be necessary to fund all their wish projects, you know. I came up with an idea that could have done that, that would have not changed the station, except for the better. Wouldn't have made it mainstream. And yet they took all my statements and turned them around against me. Well, he said I would never be honest about anything openly like that again because it would be used against me. And I don't want that, you know, to be used against me. That said, so please understand it's not just what someone has said, it is the context in which they have said it that makes a difference. When people said that the station was being taken hostage, I was out on the road at that time and I asked, what change has been made? There's massive firings, massive bannings, all right? The question is, who was fired for what cause? I'm Gary Nall, for those of you who just joined us. We are talking with Utrecht Lead. Utrecht, here are some questions I'd like you to address and give us specifics on it the best you can. All right.
Sure.
Who have you fired, and did you give cause for each of these? When Bernard White was fired and his producer, were they given cause? Who has been banned and why?
I certainly did not fire Bernard White or Sharan Harper. Bessie Walsh did that as executive director, and they were fired for cause. Now, the details of that I can't go through because, for legal purposes, I can't discuss that. For one thing, I don't know the intimate details of every aspect of the firings. But suffice it to say that Sharan Harper, as a former shop steward, fellow shop steward, she knows, and she clearly is taking advantage of that. She has recourse through the grievance process. I had attempted to do that before. We had a meeting set up and she could not make it so that we could resolve that. And hopefully we'll meet again soon. I did reach out to her and through the union offered her something I thought she would have taken advantage of, and she rejected it. So, which is her right. Bernard White is a member, was management. He was an at-will employee, as I am. He could be fired at any time for any reason. He happened to have been fired for cause. His recourse has to be legal, and at this point I'm not aware that he has proceeded with a legal challenge. Whom have I fired? I have not yet terminated anyone who has been employed here. But some people have been removed from their programs. because of their conduct. They have done things that are exceedingly opprobrious. And even after being cautioned and even after being advised that they're skating on thin ice in the summer, they decided to go through. So it is their
action. Give us examples. Give us specifics.
Well, we had the situation with Mimi Rosenberg. Mimi Rosenberg was removed from her program. The assumption being that Ken Nash would continue as the host of Building Bridges, Ken, until he decided that he would attack me here in the master control when I attempted to ask Congressman Owens a question. Ken Nash had decided to devote his entire program to discussing me. And, you know, typical of all of these folks who are out there promoting whatever it is they're promoting as, quote, dissidents under the guise of free speech, not one has had either the ethics or the courage to speak to me. Not one. Not one has asked me a question. And I figured that in as much as I'm being discussed on this air, people being extremely rude and exclusionary, I decided that I would ask a question. And the only question I wanted to ask was of the congressman, and it was the same question I was going to ask Ken Nash. Have you bothered to talk to me? And with that, I got an elbow in my neck. Well, that ended Ken Nash's tenure as a host of a program. Other people have done egregious things, and they've been documented. They've been documented, and they've been advised. Even when I was doing my own program, I insisted that people have the right to think whatever they wish to think. And that our job is not to be in their heads. Our job simply is to provide the fullest information that we possibly can and leave the final decision-making to them. That is out of respect. But when we have people who insist that they're going to do these things, it is saying that they have the right to propagandize. They have the right to tell people what to think. And they know that it is a lie. They know it. They know it.
All right. But how do you think it looks if you walk into, on two separate occasions, into studios where people are doing a show? If you've not been invited, you may disagree with what they say, but part of the principle of free speech radio is we can disagree with it, but if they're on the air, don't they have a right to suggest whatever they're doing? And don't you have a right when they get off the air to give your point of view, or on your own show, to try to correct that? You believe that it's right to walk into someone's...
Yes. In fact, I'll tell you why. I had done a series of orientation sessions with every producer. I invited all producers to these sessions. And I told them what is expected as a standard of broadcasting. I had occasion recently to interrupt a program here in which one programmer went on the air and said, Robert Knight has been fired. Well, gee, you have to pass my door to come into master control. You are a programmer. You are responsible for the dissemination of information. At the very least, you exercise your journalistic imperative and you confirm the information that you are disseminating. Now, if it doesn't matter to you to confirm the information, to authenticate it, and you go on the air and you recite this incorrect information in order to incite a reaction, my job is to arrest the situation right away. You forfeit the right to conclude or to continue your program uninterrupted because you are committing on the air a grievous offense. You are damaging my character, and you are reporting a lie. An incorrect statement is going out on the air, and my job is to control the air. Now, people may not be ready for this, but that's my job as general manager, to control the air. Programmers have been entrusted with airtime. Nobody owns their airtime. And if, as a programmer, you do not come up, you do not meet the minimal standards of programming, and if you are brazen enough to commit these atrocities in public, you should have no difficulty being corrected in public.
Whose rules are those?
Those are rules that have been set by Pacifica for a long time.
All right.
And also, that's the way...
Then are they, Utrice, are they being selectively applied? Would you do the same for other programs that are not talking about you, but are talking about issues that are equally biased or equally slanted or equally libeling? In which case, you're going to be jumping on the air an awful lot around here.
Actually, no, I don't intend to jump on the air. I sustained about 6 or 7 months of unrelenting attack. People saying all kinds of wrong things about me. All kinds of false things were said about me on this air, and mm-hmm. I chose not to do anything about it until it reached the point of it just crossed the line. There's something to be said about this notion of free speech. For one thing, it is not absolute. Free speech is not an absolute concept, and it carries with it the tandem responsibility to make sure that whatever it is you say is in fact true. Because you are going to yell about free speech doesn't mean that you have the right to desiccate my character or anybody else's character and to inflict all kinds of punishment upon people because you choose at one point or the other to abuse the airwaves and thereby abuse the listener.
Have you at the same time gone into those individuals who have attacked mm-hmm. the dissidents, which has happened many times here, the Bernard White's been attacked and many people have been attacked, and disciplined them or gone on the air to say, you cannot say this, this is wrong to say this, you know, you're supposed not to be saying anything bad about people.
Well, I did.
Otherwise, then you have a double standard. You shouldn't have people being able to say, not say something, because you put the rule down, but other people being allowed to because it looks selective.
Well, in which case, we shouldn't be doing this program at all. This happens to be, by the way, one of the few programs that I've heard on any of these discussions that sincerely made an effort to ascertain the facts.
That's all I care about.
Yes, but I'm saying that consider that on this radio station, this is just about unique. That's the sad part. The fact is that, for the most part, people have been functioning not as people interested about serious inquiry, but people who are interested in propaganda. They themselves yield the responsibility independently to corroborate their facts. They just do not. This is intentional ignorance that has been democratized. They accept the blatherings of whoever, and they disseminate it. That is irresponsible. That is irresponsible. Apart from the fact that it is so pathetically beneath minimal standards of journalism. I mean, I had the leader of this movement, Juan Gonzalez, actually call me after he stood up before a crowd of some 1,200 people, I'm told, assassinating my character. And then calls me the next day because, and he says it to me the next day, well, you know, I just came into town and I really don't know what's happening, so could you fill me in on it? And I said, well, wait a minute. You planted an axe in the middle of my head before a crowd of 1,200 people just last night. You are calling me after the deed is done to ascertain the facts. And I'm supposed to share my insights with somebody like you? And you call yourself a journalist? And you call this fair? There's no reason for us to talk. There's no reason as a journalist to another journalist.
At some point, Yatrice, everyone has to talk.
Sure.
And you have to have reasonable voices talking. First, you have to ascertain what are the facts. The first rule of science is not to ask why, but what. Once you understand what is occurring, then you try to find out why it's occurring. Then what does it mean? We have had too many, on all sides, too many presumptions without looking to see are these presumptions valid. Can we discredit our own point of view? If we can, then it's not a point of view we should hold. My interest is in just saying, if someone says that this is happening, then is it happening? And is it happening in the way they're saying it's happening?
Exactly.
Because that's the issue.
That's what we started with in October.
Yeah.
Somebody's saying, this is happening, and nobody has said, prove it. Prove it. This is happening? Fine. Prove it. And it still stands. The challenge still stands. You prove what you say.
Well, I would suggest, and I have all along encouraged the audience, to please keep itself neutral until all the facts are made known, because otherwise they could be biasing themselves on either side. And I don't want to see people maligned. I don't want to see people who are well-intended on either side hurt, because it's not going to help make the radio station a better place. It's not going to help solve some of these issues. Right now, where are we on BAI? Right now, what are the changes that you would like to see occur? Right now, where do you see the primary differences? Let's get beyond the clicks.
Sure.
All right? The clicks exist. That is an absolute irrefutable fact, and always have. What is the real difference? Is it, and I'll give you a couple scenarios, and you tell me whether you feel these are valid or invalid. Do you believe that part of the argument is one group holds that BAI or Pacifica stations, but specifically BAI and KPFA, have been bastions of positions, attitudes, and programming that are at the very edge of where society has comfortably placed itself. Therefore, it's not going to be presenting information or ideas that anyone else, not even NPR, is going to do, and therefore it is necessary to protect that type of programming. And it's less important the quality of the programming person and their talents than to keep that home for a refuge for all radical ideas alive. That's one idea.
Well, first of all, I would test the concept of people's notions about radicalism. If this is radicalism, I beg to differ. If what we're experiencing now is radicalism, I seriously beg to differ. WBAI has been kidding itself for a long time. We've been in love with our own perceptions, and that's what they are, perceptions. We perceive ourselves to be at a place where, scientifically, we simply can't quantify it. And in fact, the evidence suggests that wherever it is we are far away from it. We need to get hip as to where we are.
Where are we? Where have we been? And where are we? And what if Lou Hill were alive today, what would he be thinking of this?
I have no clue. He would be thinking, well, gee, they're going through the same thing that caused me to take my own life. Exasperation with the so-called radical left.
He was thrown off his own station.
I'm saying it's exasperation with people who believe they're radical and don't have a clue. They're rebels without a clue. This station has enormous capacity to be of service, not just to the public, but to policy makers, because we should be having direct impact on public policy. That's what our station ought to be doing. But our station needs to stop thinking, the people here, we all need to stop thinking that we know everything. We don't know everything. We need to pause and take instruction. And the instruction comes from the quantifiable evidence that we have, which tells us who our listeners are. And as I said, our listeners are increasingly people of color. Our listeners are heavily immigrant. Our listeners are progressive whites. Our listeners are older. And our listeners are people who have stuck with us through thick and thin. That's what we need to pay attention to. I am not going to stop. I'm not going to be immobilized by the screechings of a tiny crew and ignore the needs of the many. The needs of the many demand my attention and consume my attention. And there are enough of us, and that's the work we are doing here. Contrary to popular belief, we are not falling apart at all. We are working harder than ever to be human, to be in touch with each other, to forge alliances here that have not been forged before.
Give us examples.
Just the whole idea of greeting, you know, I used to complain in staff meetings about the lack of manners. I would come into the station and the first task would be to visit people and say good morning. This is as a programmer. And people would not say, they would not acknowledge a simple thing like that. And it used to irk me that people could be so caustic and so uncivilized. Well, gee, if that is the mood that you bring to work, it says something about who you are. And who you are doesn't stop, you know, when you get on the air. You take that on the air, too. You take your psychoses and your inadequacies and your fears and everything else on the air. You think people don't hear it? You know, you could develop whatever mantras you want, but what they're hearing is you on the inside. You are delivering who you are while you're on the air. So I'm very clear about what it is we are trying to do. We've had several sessions of people. Carletta has been conducting workshops. I've done some workshops. And we're meeting. We're constantly meeting. And we're constantly trying to improve our interpersonal skills because we have to work like hell to bring some measure of rationality to the station and to the way it's functioning and to get into people's consciousness that they are here because there's a purpose for them being here. It is not about, I'm here and I've got an audience and look at me, I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm a legend in my own mind. No. You are here because, supposedly, you are committed to a larger objective, much larger than yourself. And because you're committed to that larger objective, there are certain things that you have to do. I have been telling many of the programmers, and I'm going to nail them to it, putting them on a performance track.
Which would include what?
Assessing your audience. I will sit with every programmer whose program is in a dead zone and give you incentive to improve it. And if you can't improve it, it will go.
I saw some figures that showed that the station, BAI,
yes,
has not grown in 5 years.
We have not grown. And I'm being charitable because I'm only looking at the last 5 years. I decided not to look at the last 10 because I still want to be hopeful. The last 5 years, despite the pratings, the last 5 years, this station has been inert. It has not gone anywhere. And that is because we believe we know what we're doing. We have had no scientific measurement. We have had devised no tools at all for measurement of our progress. I have not, coming into this position, I have not inherited a single thing that allows me to quantify what it is I'm supposed to be doing or what the station is supposed to be doing. So we have to start from scratch, and I don't mind because I'm good at startups.
Do you feel that you are in a position to be challenged as you have because you have a very strong personality and you're very opinionated in what you believe? And they're not willing to take anything from anyone? Were other people before you, no one's had your personality. You trees. You're one of a kind.
Is that a good thing? Are you giving me a compliment or what? I have to check. Is this a compliment? I hope so. Well, actually, I'll tell you this. I grew up in a family where every one of us, I would say, received excellent training for the challenges of life. Neither of my parents were formally educated to any large degree, but remain in my mind as the most brilliant people I've ever met, because they took us through a rigorous course of study about how you prepare yourself psychologically and emotionally for the vicissitudes of life. I've known real challenges and real problems, and this is not one of them. This is an irritation. It is not a struggle. It is not a crisis. It is a case of manufactured dissent. It is a case of people who still have not resolved their childhood problems, working them out at this stage in their lives. I don't scare too easily. I've gotten a lot of death threats and whatnot, and I don't scare too easily. If you grew up with Claude and Gertrude Lead, you know real fear. You know what real fear feels like. I do know that I stood in front of the coffin of Samori Marksman, and I made him a solid and solemn promise that I would do whatever I can to make sure that the course he had put us on, that I will make sure that we remain on that course and achieve the modest goals and objectives that he had articulated. And it's a simple 4-point plan: to increase our subscribership, to increase our revenues, to upgrade our technology and the ability to do our broadcasting well, and to certainly improve our programming. There are a lot of folks who have been getting by, skating by, and think that simply because they sit down behind a microphone, it makes them a broadcaster. And with the notion of, quote, free speech, they could just yammer and waste time. Not even at the college level is that acceptable, let alone here. There will be accountability. If you do not identify with the serious mission of this radio station, well, you'll have a choice. You could voluntarily leave, or you would be asked to leave. But we have serious things to do. All of this time that has passed by, we should have been concentrating on what this government at the different levels might be doing to people to snuff out opportunity and possibility and growth for them. We should be talking about the critical issues of the day, helping to shape policy by doing a bang-up job of information dissemination. Instead, we are stuck in this narcissistic mode in which we think that we are the world. We are of primary consequence. And we are allowing this small band of, I don't know what to call them, because I don't think they're principled at all, and they certainly have no credibility, no ethics. We've allowed them to stymie our growth, our movement forward. They do not really amount, in my consciousness, they do not occupy even the remotest corners of my mind.
Patrice, explain the difference to this audience between a progressive agenda and the historical agenda, where the ideology is different. And I'll give you a reason why I think it's so important to do this. When I was speaking with Sybil Wong, and I've had many interviews with Sybil Wong, she said, Gary, one of the problems is that you have a difference in where people feel ideologically the supports for the station should come from. My argument to her was, my response to her was, well, if you want to have the audience there to support a particular type of programming, all under the umbrella that the programming would really represent something Pacifica's mission is about, what happens if that support isn't there? Who's supposed to support unsupportable programming? And why isn't the audience there? And what would you do to change it? On the one hand, you had the progressives saying, we want better radio, without going mainstream. You can have better radio, BAI can sound better with better programming and better standards, and get that extra audience in if it's consistently listenable and consistently serving the public's needs. If you have something that serves public needs, you'll draw an audience. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you won't. You have two radically different views of how that's done. Historically, you have not had one view dominating. You've had smatterings of both. And then in all this, we're supposed to end up having a loyal, growing audience that would support us whether we gave them premiums or not, which never happens, and we struggle by.
Well, change that a bit.
Yeah.
But it never happens. It's happening now.
So take us on an ideological journey, so at least we have an idea of how you're thinking and where you see the station going.
I do not, and I said this in a staff meeting, I have my own personal ideology. I am absolutely clear about that. But I will not impose it on anybody else. That's sacred ground to me. What it is you choose to develop as your own political philosophy, that's your business.
But we're talking about the station.
I am talking about the station. There is this perception that we come to this with ideological imperatives, and I'm saying no. We have to get out of that. That is not our mission.
But historically it has been.
Well, no, it hasn't. This is the funny thing. When you go back to Lou Hill...
Well, hold on. Let me challenge that.
Lou Hill.
All right.
Lou Hill had conservatives, he had communists, he had Republicans, he had everybody.
We don't have that today.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
You don't have diversity.
His thing was about the multiplicity of views, that we get great democracy when we entertain all the varying thoughts out there and put them to the test. That is democracy. It is not about you have to pre-qualify yourself as a socialist or a leftist of some sort in order either to work here or to have a program or to be a listener. No. That is what has been wrong here for a long time. And that is why we get this click. Ideology, you have your personal ideology, that's fine. I have my personal ideology. But I am not going to superimpose that on any listener, because I would be disrespecting the listener.
I agree. I've never shared my sexual, political, or religious views with people in my audience. I've never even done a show on this, because I don't believe that's relevant.
I have had friends for decades, and they will tell you to a person, I have never asked even my very closest friends, even people in my own family, are you a Republican or a Democrat or what? I don't ask these questions. I don't ask questions about your religion, your sexual orientation. These are very private matters. I am excited by the idea that we can excite people enough to put elastic in the thinking that they do.
But you're aware that historically the view has been that BAI should be the final bastion. For a time it was communist. Clearly people with a ultra-liberal or leftist point of view.
And but look, we had William Buckley here.
At one time.
Yeah, we had. This is my point. WBAI.
That's a long time ago.
It may have been, in fact,
one of the recent memos that was circulated, in one of the, what I would consider the disparaging memos, was that an individual had offered a premium from a conservative individual, and they were attacking the idea the station was going to the dogs because one of the premiums being offered was from a conservative person.
This is right out of the Unabomber's mind, isn't it? That somehow you have to pass an ideological litmus test. Okay, let's apply the ideological litmus test. Would you, if you were to apply the ideological litmus test, qualify these so-called progressives as progressives? No. No. They are so far left, they are ultra-right. They've gone around the circle, and they don't know. You want to apply litmus tests? Let's do that. The actions of this group are so bizarre. They're so bizarrely ultra-right that they can stand up and talk about being leftist until they turn green. I am not interested in what they say. I'm interested in what they do. And their actions tell me that they are no different from the Nazis. They're no different from the terrorists. They're no different from ultra-fundamentalist groups. They're no different from any other group that is intolerant.
Let's examine that for a moment, because do you believe that it's fair to label someone as a Nazi knowing the Nazis were responsible for the intentional death of millions of individuals, the suffering and degradation? I have not seen from my own research where individuals should be labeled as, I would differ with you on this, Eutrice, as Nazis or religious fundamentalists. I would say that many of the tactics they have used, some of them have used, and I want to qualify that because there are some moderates. The trouble is, once you incite someone, even if you're a moderate, you can incite people who are not going to be moderate, who can be
I'm saying the word rabid. In the context of the idea of promoting this elitism, that the other, whoever they design as the other, is to be exterminated. And let's face it, there is a program of extermination going on.
That there is. But,
people have been targeted. People have been physically threatened. People have been threatened with death. You know, this is very serious. And what is interesting is that there's a racial cord happening here. The people targeted are all people of color. All people of color.
But the people who are dissidents are frequently people of color. Where does that racial cord show a reality?
I'm looking at the people on the board who have been targeted are all people of color. Bessie Wash is a woman of color. I am a woman of color. I'm very serious about this. We have been through this history before.
Yeah, but Bernard's a man of color. Valerie's a woman of color.
Yes, and they, again...
Rob Robinson's a man of color.
Well, the thing that I'm saying is, when you look at people who have independent ways of thinking and who are being targeted...
Okay. What if for a moment you suspended that?
Yes.
All right, because I don't believe the racial card should be played.
It's not a racial card, and I will disagree with that. And I'm saying I am looking at life as it unfolds and as it exhibits itself. And I'm not, even on my own programs, Gary, I never shied away from this issue of race. It's, in fact, it is one of the missions of Pacifica, to deal with race. That's one of the missions that
is correct.
Lou Hill specifically talked about. The racial issue is, like W.E.B. Du Bois said, number one.
Let's go back to the beginning, something I said in the opening remarks, and I'd like to focus for a moment on that. My concern has been that when you have a disagreement with someone, keep it at the level of disagreeing with a person's point, but also be open to the fact that you may be disagreeing out of reaction on a defense mechanism. Example, if a person believes that their God is the best God, it doesn't make them a Nazi. It does make them close-minded. And their close-mindedness on that issue, they may be open on other issues, it means they're going to react. How they react, what tools they use to react, will be somewhat limited by the context of society and the laws that society provides.
I appreciate what you're saying, and perhaps it was a harsh thing to say, but I feel that. I really do feel that what has been going on, and I'm clear, it is a program of extermination.
Okay, but...
The extermination of individuals.
Okay, but
and the extermination of Pacifica. Folks cannot put their hands legally on these licenses, so they are trying to exterminate the entire system.
Well,
that's what I feel.
Okay, that's a feeling.
Yes.
All right. I'm trying to deal in facts. I respect your right to your feeling. Okay?
But I'm clear. It's a feeling. I feel this way.
I am looking and have one piece of information that is conclusive, and I need at least two more pieces of information to confirm that there is now an effort to seek at least two of the Pacifica station licenses by a very powerful person who happens to have connections with someone that people know in this audience, not necessarily my audience, but I have to have more proof before I go public with this information. It does not mean in and of itself that that was the intent. I believe it may be the consequence. If, for instance, if you end up causing such a crisis within an environment, opportunists who can see how they could use that to their advantage will step in. I made a comment recently that if...
Could I respond to that?
Yes. I'm not saying I'm not referring to you making the crisis.
No, I'm clear. It is not an unintended consequence at all. There have been meetings about this. This is a planned strategy. The idea was to torment and to purge enough members off of the national board so that the board will fall below, the membership on the board will fall below the 50%.
FCC will step in.
And the FCC will step in.
And take those licenses and give them to one person I know is trying to get those licenses, who has a lot of influence with the FCC.
But this is what I'm saying. So I do not understand it when, I do not readily believe when people say I'm progressive. No, your tactics tell me something else. You're not.
I met for an hour and a half with a man who I have never known before, except the fact that in his position, he had managed to take my program off the air at a Pacifica station. And here he was sitting across me, and I sat with him, and I listened. All I did was really listen to him, because he went on and on about how we had to destroy BAI in order to stop Pacifica. And he told me, I'm having a little difficulty understanding this. Set aside the facts for a moment. If you're intended to destroy BAI to teach Pacifica a lesson, then what will happen to BAI is it's going to be taken over by one of these corporate vultures who will see the opportunity to expand their own media empires.
Mm-hmm. And
okay?
In fact,
and he said, that's not really the important. I said, well, it is to me and everyone in New York who benefits from listening to BAI and gaining from it. I said, you want us to support your political agenda? And then he went into the whole idea how he's been an avowed anarchist his whole life, and he's working with this one person that you and I both know. In fact, that guy that you has had a sit-down with that I had the letter from, and where I went through all of his challenges, and they were all wrong. Every single one was just factually wrong. It didn't make a difference to him. But he can never accept he's wrong about anything. And he's the one who sent me this guy. He says, you must see this guy. You must see. He's going to tell you the truth on everything. He's got all the facts. Well, I listened to him. His ideas were that the Janet Reno concept of saving the children. You know, you kill the children to save them. Oh, fine. That's what you did in, you know...
Waco.
Well, destroying BAI to get back at the board doesn't make sense. People have to understand, the FCC in its current makeup is not supportive of BAI or Pacifica.
Not at all.
There's a long memory of what Pacifica had done by challenging, rightly so, the FBI and Operation COINTELPRO and many of the MKUltra. We did phenomenal broadcasting that no other commercial station or non-commercial station was going to do. KPFA, BAI, we led this for almost 15, 20 years, from the mid-60s, early 60s, right through the late 70s. Some of those people who were attacked from the FBI, they're very powerful today. They're no longer with the FBI. Take a very careful look at the associations and the close, real close associations in these regulatory bodies. And as one lawyer in Washington said, Gary, you have no idea how interesting this is from people who could not get a station any other way except for you all to give it to them on a platter through your conflict. And he said, you better talk with who you can talk with, who are the dissenters and the board members, because if they don't pull their act together, they're going to have their stations taken away.
Well, this is a joke because even within the clique of so-called dissenters, there is a super clique. They know what the strategy is. They know what the issue is. The other people mouthing the things, they have no clue. They're just told what the plan is. But within that group is a very tiny group that really knows what this is all about, and that is hijacking the entire Pacifica stations, the system of stations. The stations, the dissident movement in large measure has been funded by corporate money.
Prove it.
Oh, the same person.
Okay.
The same person that we have met.
All right.
Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
Is that?
That's accurate.
Okay.
That's accurate.
The same person. It's corporate money.
Yes.
The media efforts that are going on, subsidized by corporate money. These are the same people standing up on such moral high ground. They all have nosebleeds. But in fact, it's corporate money. They have no difficulty with it. And that has been their arrangement for a long time. What has happened with my coming on here is that a lot of the private little deals I have put an end to. I've put an end to them. And people are necessarily, of course, upset. They're upset. I've interrupted their private little revenue streams. I've interrupted a series of nifty little arrangements that they have had that have worked very nicely for them for a long time. I have put a decided end to that. And I'm interested now, this is the work we are doing here, people who want to go ahead and destroy Pacifica, let them try their very best. We are about the business of construction, not destruction. We are constructing a whole new paradigm here. And a lot of us are on board with it. I've gotten so many calls from people who were chased out of here, who were doing the kind of programming that you were talking about. They want to come back. And they will come back. Because they have dramatic contributions to make. And I'm talking really about progressives. You know, there are groups of people who talk about, you know, they're progressive. What does that mean? I'm not interested because your behavior is not at all progressive. There are a whole bunch of folks out there who have walked the walk, who have done what they needed to do to contribute to this, a revolution in this whole idea of who should lead, who has the capacity to contribute. Where are the opportunities to make a meaningful contribution so that we all benefit? It's not about me and my and I and me. No, this is not WBAIIII. This is WBAI, period, one I. And that's where we are going. We are trying our best to come up with a different formulation based not on gut feeling, but based on fact, based on science. This is how we are looking today. This is what the relevance of the station will be in the market that we are in. And these are the people who are listening. These are the people who had listened to us and have left us. We want to get them back. The people who are listening now, we want to serve them better. The people who should be listening, we want to find them and romance them and woo them right into our corner. We want them. We have three audiences at any one time that we ought to be talking to. And we have no time to issue poisonous press releases riddled with inaccuracies. We have no time to do demonstrations. We have no time to be involved in name-calling and vitriol. We have no time for that. Because for one thing, it is demeaning and belittling. It does not help us grow as individuals. And it does not place us where it is we need to be, which is about getting the work done. That's really our mission right now. Everybody's online with that here. Michael G., I don't want to put him on the spot, but he can tell you, we have meetings here every day. We meet with each other every day. And we are talking with each other every day about how we reconstruct this station and what it ought to mean, the relevance it ought to have in the public arena.
Do you see any of the people who you have suspended from the air coming back? Or do you see that there's a place or no place for them?
Well, again, the reason for their suspension was their conduct. The rationale for their readmission will be their conduct.
So the door is open?
It always has been open.
All right.
I've never closed the door on anyone. I've marveled at the propensity for people to shutting the doors themselves.
What about your security system here? Tell us, why is there this security system? Why did you need it? What did it cost? And in retrospect, would you have done it again or not done it?
Well, when you have people talking about taking over a station, even by force, and you know that one of the requirements of the FCC, if you're going to have a license at all, is you ought to control your air. When you have that kind of talk, you have to take precautions. Secondly, we were so blasé, even at 505 8th Avenue, we never had a door that worked. We never had a lock. And we repeated the same kind of neglect here for at least almost 2 years. The front door of this station could not be locked. This is in the city of New York with the kind of programming that we do. We have had workers here fearful that they were the only people in the whole station and the door. Anybody could walk in the door at any time. I've had personal experiences with people confronting me. You know, it's a good thing that they didn't mean any harm, but if they did, I would have been a goner. Right and master control, because access was so unfettered.
You mean people just walked in and
walked right in.
That's not appropriate.
No.
I believe that there are certain standards that are necessary in order to run a station. A station is a business. Like it or not, if you don't run it correctly, then the audience loses because it will go broke.
And we had a person attacked, physically attacked here, by people who were, you know, coming through the station marauding, like marauders. We can't have that.
So if I understand you correctly, the reason that you have a security system is because you want to maintain the security of the premises and the people who work here.
That's correct.
All right. Most people who have ever been in business or had a business or any other corporation in America, any other business in America, any other radio station in America, has certain security precautions.
Look, you sit in a cab, you're being photographed for security reasons. Okay? The idea is that people need to be safe. And since other people took it upon themselves to create an environment in which things are likely to happen, they've unleashed a whole bunch of demons, which they now would like to distance themselves from. But the same people complaining about the security system caused a need for it. They are the reason, in large measure, that we need something of this order in order to assure the safety of all who work here.
So let me summarize a few things and see if I'm accurate in this summation. We're coming up near the end of the program. You're looking to create a really, from the original Lou Hill concept, of a truly progressive station, having people from all walks of life, all political spectrums, on, not just segregating into an elite little group of left-leaning people, but
allegedly left-leaning people.
Everyone,
we want real left-leaning people.
All right, we want people from all walks of life who hold certain professional standards, and you're going to say, here's the bar you have to reach.
That's it.
If you want to be on the air, you want to produce a show, you want to work at the station, it's no longer anybody can come, no matter what their qualifications, and hang out here. You have to meet standards.
That's correct.
All right. You're going to also have to be accountable. What goes out over the air can no longer be anything you felt you could get away with through under a freedom of speech. You must be responsible for the freedom of speech you share. And if you're not, you're not going to have that right. And if you do, then you'll have that right if you're doing it at a high standard. You're trying to reach out to other audiences who've been alienated in the past because of racism or anti-Semitism or all the other things that have occurred at the station that we're all fully familiar with.
That's correct. Yes.
You're trying to make the station more listenable, maintaining its mission but broadening its audience, with the idea that no one should be deprived of quality information, no matter what their background, and that those people could support and infuse the station so that we could have better standards for people working here. You don't see this as a conspiracy. There's no effort to take over the stations and sell them, but there may be an effort, and probably, well, I can confirm that there is at this time an effort to seek out two of the licenses, but not from the people on the board and not from the people of the station, but rather from people who are opportunistic who see the value of this if the conflict continues not resolved. You believe that Valerie Van Isler, who had a long and dedicated career at the station, was given ample opportunity, but as a manager, she was let go, though she was not fired. She was actually given an opportunity. She chose not to turn over the reins of the station, and she was given a month to do it. She was given the whole month of December, and instead she was motivated by or was speaking with people who were part of that little clique who had historically had control. They then fomented the idea that the station's being taken over instead of simply a manager change. You were not a part of any meetings. You did not even know that this was going on until after all this rhetoric, negative rhetoric on the air. That's when Jose was asked to take in, become station manager. He rejected it because of personal statements to him that he felt would undermine him as station manager. You took on the position. You were not willing to accept the emotional or physical abuse that was occurring. You suspended some people, and you've left the door open that if those people want to dialogue with you to come back on, they can. Is that a fair analysis?
Pretty fair.
Okay. Yes. I want to thank you very much.
I want to thank you, and all the more because, again, what you are doing now is something that the alleged seasoned reporters easily could have done. The resources have been there. The will, apparently, was not.
Nothing gets better unless we apply some healing principles. Get the issues out on the table, look at them, see what makes sense, and then say, what do we have to do to go forward without this conflict being constantly chomping on everyone's heels? I believe that through this conflict, the station will be a better place. Pacifica will be a stronger, more responsible foundation. And I believe that all reasonable voices have a place to be heard.
And I want to thank Amon DeMille. I think we owe him a great debt for giving up his time today.
I want to thank you all very much for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Off on my trip, but I will be broadcasting every day, so you'll have a new show live or on tape every single day until I get back in the studios. Have a nice day, everyone.
To Hi-Fi, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
Pencil. Okay, this is Joe Franklin broadcasting on radio station WBAI.
It's 99.5% all natural and preservative free. WBAI FM in New York.
I love this radio station.
That is brand new, very new from Henry the Skipper Franklin. Well, it's a number of individuals on this particular CD. It is Franklin Clover and Seals, Steve Clover, Mark Seals, and Henry Franklin. And it's called Three Worlds. Records, and that's on the Beeswax label, brand new from The Skipper. You are tuned to WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. Once again, we'd like to thank Armand DeMille and the Positive Mind, and certainly the listeners of the Positive Mind with Armand DeMille making way for this additional hour of natural living with Gary Null. Coming up.